Thank you very much. Well, first of all, thank you all very much for joining. My name is Marika Konings. I'm a policy director at ICANN, and together with my colleagues Rob Hogarth, Bart Boswinkel, and Olaf Nordling, I'll be hosting today's session. Before we get started, I would just like to cover a couple of housekeeping items. First of all, to reduce interference, can I please ask you all to mute your phones? You may use your own mute button, or you can use star 6 to mute, and star 6 again to unmute your line. And there will be an opportunity at the end of the session to ask questions, so at that point you should feel free to unmute your lines. There is an Adobe Connect room for this session in which the slides can be viewed that we'll be talking through, and where you can also post questions. The link to this Adobe Connect room is included in the email you received with the meeting details, so please check back there and click on the link and you'll enter the Adobe Connect room. As I said, there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the meeting. However, during the session, you can also submit your questions by using the chat box at the bottom of the Adobe Connect window, and we'll try to do our best to answer your questions during the session. But in case you have questions that arise after the meeting or you want to follow up on any of the issues that we will discuss today, you should always feel free to send an email to the policy staff at policy-staff@icann.org. And at the end of the meeting, if you want to ask a question, you can either state your name to be added to the queue, or you can also raise your hand in Adobe Connect. You can do so by changing your status at the lower left-hand corner of the Adobe Connect window. They'll have an opportunity to raise and lower your hand. So that's it for the housekeeping items. So today's objectives. The main objective of the meeting is to provide you with an overview of ICANN as an organization, the role of policy development in ICANN, and who and how policy development is done. But the most important objective of this session is that we hope to provide you with the necessary tools and information to become involved to help shape the future of the Internet. Oh, I'm sorry. Just went a few slides too far. We are aware that there's a lot of information contained in this presentation, including links to background information. So just rest assured that the slides and the recording will be made available following this session so that you'll have an opportunity to look back at the information or use the links to find additional information. So here I would like to hand it over to my colleague Rob Hogarth, who will be providing you with an introduction to ICANN. Rob?
Thanks very much, Marika, and good day to everybody. Thanks for joining us. I think we have a good crowd. My job is to give you an overview of what ICANN does, what's our role in policy development with respect to the DNS, and sort of set the stage for my colleagues to talk in more detail for you about the specific aspects of policy development at ICANN. As many of you know, ICANN's role in the Internet have really changed over the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, when you look at this slide and see Internet users and the global distribution of Internet users back in 1990, it was primarily a Western-based, U.S.-based focus network. But, you know, 17 years later, we began to see a much more evenly distributed community of people who use this tremendous technology. And that continues to evolve, but the key element of that is ICANN's role of really trying to see how this huge and complex interconnected network can work together. Right now, there are nearly 200 million domain names registered globally. They are in different categories, and many different people play roles in them. Many different organizations have interests in them. But as you can see, just in literally the last year and a half or so, the numbers, even with an economic downturn globally, continue to grow. And so it's a network that continues to remain very vibrant, very important to many economies throughout the world, many communities throughout the world. And ICANN plays a small but relatively critical part of making it all work. I was challenged with my colleagues in terms of how much background information to give you guys. Some of you are probably very well versed in the DNS and then how the internet works. But we thought it was important to give you a brief sort of overview of the DNS and how ICANN plays a role in that. For many of you, you know that for the internet to work, you have to type address into your computer. It's usually a name or a number. If you want to access another individual via email or if you want to check out a website, either in your own country or somewhere else in the world. And the address of each one of those connections has to be unique so that the computers know where to find each other. ICANN's job is to coordinate all those unique identifiers across the world, because without that coordination, we simply wouldn't have a global internet. So back in 1998, as you saw in that earlier slide, where most of the distribution was primarily Western-based and primarily U.S.-based, ICANN was formed. And it was formed as a not-for-profit partnership of people all over the world dedicated to keeping the internet secure, stable, and interoperable. The real key, of course, for ICANN is that, you know, we have to make sure that the various unique identifiers that allow computers on the internet to find each other are maintained in a unique and clear way. Some people have referred to it as the phone book of the internet. Whatever metaphor you use, the real key is that when someone types in an address, they know where they are going, and they have a level of trust and security that the name or number they type in will be resolved. So just briefly, what's the domain name system? The DNS, the domain name system, is essentially a system designed to make the internet accessible to us all. The main way that computers contact each other is through a series of numbers. With each number, essentially, it's called an IP address, and it correlates to a different device. But as many of us realize, with different languages and different ways of communicating, it's difficult for the human mind to remember a long string of numbers. So what the DNS does is it uses letters or characters rather than numbers, then links those series of letters or characters with a precise series of numbers. So the end result is like ICANN's website. It can be found at ICANN.org rather than you typing in, for example, 192.0.34.163. That's how the computers on the network know it. But we as humans are more well-versed in letters or characters. Now, of course, one advantage to this type of system, apart from making the network easier to use for people, is that a particular domain name doesn't have to be tied to a particular computer, because the link between a particular domain and a particular IP address can be changed fairly quickly and easily. And because there can be many of these changes, it's important that changes be recognized by the entire internet fairly quickly, usually within a day or two. And it's because the DNS infrastructure is constantly updating that is wonderful because of its flexibility, but also requires sort of a central mechanism or means to make sure that there is a directory, that all the computers and servers know where a particular communication is going to be going. Now let's talk briefly about, you know, the domain name itself. There's two elements to the domain name. There's the element before, and there's the element after the dot. The part of to the right of the dot, such as .com, .net, .org, .de, and so on, is known as a top-level domain, or a TLD. One company, in each case called a registry, is in charge of all the domains that end with that particular TLD. And that company has access to a full list of domains directly under that name, as well as the IP addresses with which those names are associated. Now, the part of the dot is the domain, the part before the dot is the domain name that you register, which is then used to provide online systems such as websites, emails, and so on. And those domains are distributed by a large number of companies that we refer to as registrars. Now, ICANN's role is essentially to draw up contracts with each registry, and it also runs an accreditation system for registrars. And so it's these contracts that are designed to present a consistent, a stable environment for the domain system. So essentially, you know, the DNS provides the addressing system for the internet so we can all reach particular websites or email addresses. And it's ICANN's role to be in the center of that to help coordinate and make sure that those various pieces of the industry communicate and stay together. And the important aspect of that when we talk about ICANN is that we are essentially the place where a lot of those discussions about policy can take place. It's an arena for debate. It's an arena for where people can really talk about the issues related to those. Just at the end of last year, ICANN signed an affirmation of commitments with the Department of Commerce here in the United States. And a piece of that affirmation document, I think, provides a real sort of beautiful picture in terms of specifically noting what is ICANN. It's a multi-stakeholder organization in that all the various parties who participate and have an important role in the DNS are involved. A critical aspect of ICANN is that it's private sector-led. It's not a top-down government-organized system, but it's essentially a community of all the various parties who make up the Internet and provides a place for them to engage in policy development essentially from the bottom up, not from the top down. It's also important, as I just noted, for DNS technical coordination to really assure everybody involved that the system is stable, that it's secure, and that it consistently operates on a 24/7 reliable basis. And bottom line, of course, is that it acts for the benefit of the entire globe, for all the members of the Internet who are distributed fairly even now across the world. Now, within that, the real concept and operating principles that govern the organization are fairly broad. I already mentioned the aspect of maintaining the unique identification system. Another aspect of ICANN's operating principles is promoting competition among the registrars and registries who help distribute the names and numbers. And the key being that the registrants, the people who actually will obtain names, have some choice in terms of who they will use or how they can operate. A key aspect, as I've noted already, is that it's a multi-stakeholder organization, that it really needs to be a place that assures the various stakeholders in the Internet that they have a place where they can come, discuss issues, identify problems, and find the best way to work together. The other aspects on this slide I've talked about before, but the two important ones, in addition to the bottom-up approach, is ensuring an opportunity for global participation. You know, as we have evolved from a network that was primarily Western-based, largely English-focused, how do we reach out and make sure that members of the community around the globe have realistic opportunities to participate in policy development, to understand what's going on, and to really contribute their perspective and their expertise. And to do that more or less in a consensus-based decision-making approach. It's something that you'll hear about from my colleagues in a couple of minutes, the importance of truly having open and broad discussions and not only an understanding of an issue, but an understanding of everybody's perspective and then trying to reach a solution that works for as many members of the community as possible. Now, the structure of ICANN is set up primarily by looking at structures, that we call them, of supporting organizations and advisory committees. And again, I'm just giving the highlights in this introduction. Some of my colleagues will be talking about some of these groups in a little bit more detail, particularly the GNSO, the CCNSO, and the ASO. But essentially, as you see from this general chart, the breakdown is in two major categories: supporting organizations that represent organizations that deal with IP addresses or that deal with domain names, or managers of country code top-level domains, .de, .uk, you know, representatives and managers from various countries around the world. And then there's a segment of the ICANN structure and community where participants are involved in advisory committees who provide the ICANN board with advice and recommendations. And they represent governments and international treaty organizations, as an example for the GAC. They represent root server operators through the RSAC, those concerned with the Internet security, the ESAC, and the at-large community, meaning individual, average, Internet users, who are the largest group of stakeholders within the Internet. And as you can see, the structure is fairly balanced but focused on providing advice and information to the ICANN board. They are the final decision makers. The ICANN board is made up of 21 members, as you can see on the slide. 15 of them have voting rights, and 6 are non-voting liaisons. The majority of the voting members, 8 of them, are chosen by an independent nominating committee, and the remainder are nominated by members from the supporting organizations that I talked about on the last slide. Just generally sort of to round out the structure, ICANN has a president and a CEO who's also a board member. He directs the work of us, the ICANN staff, and we're based around the world to help coordinate, manage, and finally implement a number of the various discussions and decisions made by the SOs and the ACs. And then finally, there's an ICANN ombudsman whose role is to act as an independent reviewer of the work of ICANN, the staff, and the board. All of that, of course, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, is now being governed by the affirmation of commitments that ICANN signed late last year. And while that system is just evolving, it's essentially structured to be members of the global community joining together and reviewing aspects of ICANN's work on a regular basis to ensure that the organization remains accountable to the community. Now, who participates? Well, in generally, you know, while I've identified for you many communities and many different categories of people, it's also important to note that people have different motivations. We have participants who are interested in advocating for a particular point of view for a company or a group of stakeholders or communities. There are folks who participate, and like many of you today, just from an informational perspective, just wanting to learn more information. There are those through the SAC and the RSAC who offer technical expertise. And as you think about getting more involved in ICANN policy development activities, I think it's important to really understand for yourself what is your motivation, because there are different opportunities, there are different working groups, different structures, different ways that you can volunteer, and depending upon what your goal is, there are many different options. I've already talked about some of the key actors who are involved. Clearly, the registries, the registrars, and also the registrants. But when you look at the entire community, you really see ICANN as an ecosystem, just like the Internet. I mean, from this rather messy slide that really actually has 10 slides that build it up, you see that there are a lot of different participants just within what ICANN does to help coordinate the unique identifiers within the DNS. You've got the pieces of the registrants and the registries that we've talked about, but as you can see, there are other very important actors in the whole process, from the users as consumers or content publishers to the entities like the ISPs who actually act as that go-between, provide the networks for everybody to access. And then you have a number of other stakeholders who participate in various ways, like the ISOC, the IETF, and other stakeholder communities. So it's a real large group of people, organizations who have interests and who have opportunities to interface with ICANN. At the same time, it's also important to note that ICANN is not the be-all and end-all of operations on the Internet. As many of you know and are involved in other organizations, ICANN is just a piece of an entire ecosystem within the Internet that involves itself with various aspects of government, various laws, various other public policy issues. So we're just a small piece of that, but an important technical and coordination role, and we really appreciate all of you being interested and hope that you take some opportunities to participate more. It is important, though, in managing expectations to note what ICANN doesn't do. We don't control content on the Internet. ICANN can't stop spam. We don't deal with access to the Internet. But through its coordination role in the Internet's naming system, we hope that ICANN does continue to play an important role in impacting how the internet expands, how it evolves. While the list of issues on this slide are far-reaching, and while a number of ICANN activities indirectly influence these, we are not the sole place or location to talk about these issues in detail. Just to give you a general example, as you can see from this slide, there are a variety of different policies and issues that we do work on. I've got those listed on this slide here. They range from dispute resolution to who is to very specific technical issues like how do you transfer a registration, how do you govern how people look for or decide what names that they want to use, and then, as you know, other broader issues reaching all the way up to the global policy issues with respect to IPv6 and shifting over from IPv4. I'll stop there, Marika. I think that we'll have some questions and answer opportunities at the end of the presentation, but I hope that Marika and the rest of my colleagues will now be able to give you a better drill down in terms of what various pieces of the ICANN structure do with respect to policy development, and ideally how all of you can participate. Thanks, Marika.
Thank you very much, Rob. So as Rob said, now we'll actually be moving into the details of policy development at ICANN. So who makes policy at ICANN? There are three bodies in ICANN that develop policy recommendations, also called supporting organizations. So each of these will be covered in further detail in the next slides. So firstly, you have the generic name supporting organization, also known as GNSO, which deals with the generic top-level domain space, so .com, .net, .biz. Then you have the country code name supporting organization, also known as CCNSO, which is responsible for the country code top-level domain name space, so .us, .uk, .co.uk, .de, to give you some examples. And lastly, there is the address supporting organization, also known as ASO, which is responsible for internet address policy. And it's worth pointing out in all instances something that Rob already emphasized as well, that the ICANN board is the ultimate decision-making body on whether a policy is adopted or not. So, however, in all of this, it's very important to remember that policy development at ICANN is done through a bottom-up process. This means open participation, which as a result has a diverse group of participants with different areas and levels of expertise and knowledge. And the objective is to reach agreement by coming to consensus so that recommendations have a broad base of support from different parts of the community. And some of you might have already experienced that if you have attended ICANN meetings or have taken part in some of the working groups or initiatives. But many people involved in ICANN are very passionate about their views and the internet, which can result in very interesting exchanges of views that are often spirited, but sometimes can also be unstrained and blunt. So how can you make a difference? So how can you get heard in this loud and sometimes confusing environment? And, more details on how you can participate in each of the supporting organizations that develop policy will be provided in the upcoming slides. But I think it's important to note here that, before any decision is made or any recommendation is adopted, there is at least one, but most of the times many more public comment periods or public exchanges held in which anyone can express their views of opinion. And these public comment forums form an intrinsic part of the policy development process and are required to be taken into account when policy recommendations are made. And as mentioned before, most working groups and initiatives are open to participation from individuals or representatives. So in this way, you can also contribute directly to the policy development discussions. Now we'll start moving into more detail on each of the supporting organizations and the way in which they develop policy. So first up is the GNSO, so the generic name supporting organization. So as mentioned before, the GNSO is responsible for the generic top-level domain space, which covers top-level domains such as .com, .net, .cat, .biz, .info, and you see some others here on the slide. Currently, the GNSO consists of 21 councillors that come from 6 different constituency stakeholder groups and 3 members that are appointed by the ICANN nominating committee, also known as NOMCOM. Rob referred to this earlier as well. They also appoint a number of members to the ICANN board and some of the other supporting organizations. So the GNSO recently went through a reorganization, and as you can see on this slide, it's now structured around 2 houses, one of which is the contracted party house, which houses the registry and registrar stakeholder groups, and then there's a non-contracted party house, which consists of the commercial constituencies, such as the business constituency, the IPC constituency, and the ISP constituency, and the non-commercial stakeholder group. I won't go into much detail here. We have a lot of information on the whole restructuring and what that has entailed, so I would just recommend, if you're really interested in the structure, to check out the GNSO website for further information on that. So how is policy developed in the GNSO? So the ICANN bylaws describe in great detail how a policy development process should be run in the GNSO context. I would like to point out, however, that this is a process that's currently under review, and some changes are likely to be made in the near future to address some of the issues that have been encountered with the existing process, such as very restricted timelines and a need for having more community discussion and especially at the start of a process where an issue is being scoped and explored. So how is the policy developed? So first of all, an issue is raised for consideration by either one of the council members. The board can raise an issue for consideration, or one of the advisory committees, which we come to later, can also raise an issue for consideration. If that request is accepted, ICANN staff is tasked to prepare an issues report in which they aim to outline the issue in a very objective manner, trying to gather information and data on the different views on that issue, and also incorporating an opinion from ICANN legal staff on whether it's an issue that is in the scope of ICANN's mission, so basically the remit of the technical coordinator of the DNS, and as well in the scope of the GNSO, so does it relate to generic top-level domains. Based on that paper, the GNSO Council then decides whether they initiate the policy development process. If it's accepted, a volunteer working group is convened, and this is one of those groups that's open to anyone interested to participate. The only requirement is there that you sign up, you provide your statement of interest. We're all clear that everyone here has specific interests, and that's no issue at all, just as long as you state them up front so people know where you're coming from and what your interest in the issue might be. So that working group convenes. We have a lot of working groups going on at the moment. They tend to meet on a weekly or biweekly basis, normally for an hour and a half, where they discuss the issues, work through the different items, consider whether more research needs to be done or whether experts need to be invited to gather further information to help form their deliberations. They normally have a number of public comment periods in which they invite the public to comment on the issue or on their initial report that they develop to test some of the issues they've outlined there. And normally as well, community discussions take place with the working group at ICANN meetings on a regular basis. So once the working group has concluded its work, it basically brings forward those recommendations to the GNSO Council for its consideration. Again, as discussed before, working groups are strongly encouraged to work towards consensus. So normally a working group tries to achieve consensus on their recommendations, although there might be instances where consensus cannot be achieved and you might have either opposing views or you might have a small minority with a different view, which is then also outlined in that report and put forward to the GNSO for its consideration. So if the GNSO Council adopts those recommendations and if it concerns policy recommendations, so which would have contractual obligations on registries and registrars, those recommendations are then forward to the board for its consideration and normally adoption. Once the board adopts the policy recommendations, it's passed back to staff for implementation. In most cases, either the GNSO or working group might already provide specific guidance on implementation measures, or the board might provide direction. And on that basis, the ICANN staff will develop an implementation plan, which is then, again, through several phases as well, put back to the community for input and feedback to make sure that it matches up with the expectations and the set recommendations. And as I said already before, each of those phases is normally accompanied by public comment periods and community discussion. So to make sure that there's a broad support for the policy recommendations that are being put forward and are implemented. So just to give you one example, many of you might be aware with the new GTLD process that's currently actually in the implementation phase. So there are many issues that the community is working through in relation to implementing that that plan, but that started off as well as a policy development process where the issue was raised in 2004 or an issues report was prepared. On the basis of that, the GNSO decided to initiate a policy development process, as it was, of course, a very extensive, large project with many different angles. It took quite a substantial amount of time to actually develop those recommendations. I wouldn't say that this is a typical process. I think if you look at the more, you know, where you really focus on one issue, I think an average PDP can range from, you know, 9 months to a year on average. But this one took longer because so many issues are at stake and so many different issues needed to be covered. So a working group was formed and took 2 years to develop recommendations that were adopted by the GNSO Council in September of 2007. Following that, the board adopted the recommendations, and that was the start of the implementation process, which, as I mentioned, is currently still ongoing. So to give you an idea of the issues that are currently being discussed in the GNSO, there's currently one of, I think there are still three or four more upcoming policy development process in relation to the inter-registrar transfer policy. As Rob mentioned before, this is an existing consensus policy that outlines how domain names should or can be transferred between registrars, so it describes the different steps and processes that need to be followed. Following the implementation of that policy, it was decided that it would be good to actually review whether it was working as intended. And on the basis of that, a number of issues were identified that a working group is currently looking into on how to clarify and enhance some of those elements of the existing policy. There's another policy process ongoing on vertical integration, closely relates to the discussions that are taking place in the context of the new GTLD process. This relates to the question whether registries should be allowed to own registrars and vice versa. And then there's also a policy development process ongoing on post-expiration domain name recovery, which addresses a number of questions in relation to what rights should registrants still have following the expiration of their domain name registration to recover their domain name. Do they receive enough notice when a domain name has expired, and are the language and agreements transparent and understandable enough? So these are some of the issues that are currently ongoing, and as I said, you know, these are open working groups, and you know, anyone can join the discussions and or contribute whenever these groups put out initial reports or have community discussions. Another opportunity, of course, and I spoke briefly about the structure of the GNSO. The GNSO is divided into different constituency and stakeholder groups. Again, more information on each of those you can find on the ICANN website, but once you look back at this presentation and as Rob mentioned, you think about your motivation or your interest in getting involved, one possible avenue to explore would be to look at those different constituencies and stakeholder groups and see whether there's a community that fits with your objectives and beliefs in relation to ICANN-related issues, and you might want to consider joining the ranks of one of those and having a group of people that, you know, work towards similar objectives and similar goals. At this stage, if you just, you know, would like to just stay up to date on what's happening in the GNSO policy development and also, you know, be made aware of when there are opportunities to participate, I would strongly recommend that you sign up for the policy update. You'll find further information on that as well later in this presentation. So now I would like to hand over to my colleague, Bart, who will talk about the CCNSO.
Good afternoon. In the next slides, or in the next 10 minutes, I want to give you an overview of the structure of the CCNSO, because it's a bit different than from the GNSO. And because of the differences, it also has some impact on the policy development process within the CCNSO, the number of policy development process, and it gives you a bit of an understanding of the other activities the CCNSO is undertaking currently. Talking about the structure of the CCNSO, the CCNSO has two distinct entities. One is what is called the CCNSO membership, and the second one is the CCNSO Council. One of the differences with the GNSO probably is that CCNSO membership is voluntary, but it's only open to CCTLD managers. Currently, there are as of today, there are 106 members. Today, Poland joined, and the 106 members are, say, from a total of 240-plus CCTLDs. If you look at the membership, it's a very, very diverse group of entities. They range from larger companies like Nominat and DNIC into individuals. There are some CCs who are run by individuals, and they range. If you look at the governance and business models, there is a large variety. And if you look at the range of the numbers of domain names registered, there is also a large variety. DNIC, the CCTLD manager for Germany, has registered over 30 million domain names by now, and is therefore the second largest TLD currently. And you have some very, very small ones who have maybe registered 900 or less domain names. All these CCTLDs have one vote within the system, so you can imagine the diversity. Another reason for the diversity is the CCs are spread all over the world. They come from all the different regions, say ranging from the Pacific Islands until, as I told you, the Northwestern Europe, the large Northwestern Europe CCTLDs, and the CCs from Canada and the US. So, again, a reason for variety. So that's the membership. The council itself has 18 members. 15 are appointed by the CCNSO members, and 3 members by the NOMCOM. And one of the what is important to understand as well, because there are only, say, out of the 240-plus CCTLDs, only 106 are members, the CCNSO members meeting or the CCNSO meetings are open to members and non-members, and also to those who are interested in CCTLD matters. If you look at the CCNSO and its activities, the CCNSO activities are not limited to just policy development and recommending policy to the board. Major point is it can engage in any activities which is considered relevant by the CCTLD community from a global perspective. So, this is one of the reasons why the CC has a lot of working groups and activities like exchange of information, which do not directly relate to policy. It is more to do with building consensus across the constituency of the CCs and exchange of information among the CCTLDs. So how do you, on, say, operations, marketing, and anything? Just a moment, please. And the third aspect is to coordinate with other CCTLD or supporting organizations and advisory committees. The most important one from a CC perspective is coordination with the governmental advisory committee, because again these are also strong ties in the different countries and territories. Okay, looking at the policy development process of the CCNSO, it's differently structured even now than from the GNSO, and this has to do again with the structure or the membership and the role of the council. One of the differences probably is that the starting point is that an issue can be raised by members of the CCNSO. This can be, so these are the CCTLD managers. So if 10 members or 10 CCTLD managers think something is an issue, they can raise that issue. Another one is the so-called regional organizations. Regional organizations are associations of CCTLD manager in Europe, Asian Pacific, Africa, and Latin America. They're not part of the ICANN family of SOs and ACs, but they deal with local issues. But given they represent interests of CCTLDs, they are unable to raise an issue for a PDP. The third one is, of course, the ICANN board, and the fourth one, of course, is the CCNSO Council itself. Now, the first decision in a policy development process is a decision from the council on whether or not to prepare an issue report and to appoint an issue manager. It is not a given that the issue manager is a person from ICANN. Therefore, it is part of the policy development process that the issue manager has to be appointed by the council itself. If there, for instance, if there is a reason to think there might be a conflict of interest or anything else, the CCNSO Council may decide to appoint somebody from outside. The issue manager has to prepare the issue report. Again, one of the differences is timeline needs to be defined in this issues report. One of the differences with the GNSO process is that there are only minimum timelines defined in the bylaws and in the bylaw regarding the PDP. So therefore, what you see is these CCNSO policy developments are focused around ICANN meetings and face-to-face meetings based on the issue, and then the next step in the whole process would be the council to decide to launch a PDP, which is similar probably to the GNSO process. In the policy, the next phase is in the policy development process is interim and final reports. Again, these are open for public comment and based on consensus building, etc. So there is not very much difference there with the GNSO process. Then the next phase, again, is probably different. Not so much the council vote, although then it needs to be a quorum of regional presentation, etc. But the most important one is a members' vote. So, as I told you, the CCNSO members, the CCNSO has members, and the members of the CCNSO determine whether or not a recommendation is adopted. Once the members are in favor of it, the recommendation goes to the ICANN board, and after adoption, it is applicable to members and only to members and of the CCNSO and to ICANN itself. So what are CCNSO policies currently? Until now, the CCNSO has only run one PDP, and that was on the change of bylaws. That was done in 2004-2005, and the second PDP is currently underway, and that has to do, and that one is on the introduction of IDN CCTLDs, and it has, in fact, two parts. It's the selection of IDN CCTLD, so what is an IDN CCTLD? And the second one is the inclusion of CCTLDs in the CCNSO. In the future, there might be a PDP on delegation, redelegation, and retirement of CCTLDs. This is currently under discussion in one of the working groups, and whether or not this will become a PDP depends a bit on the depends on the recommendations of this working group. Why has the number of policies in the CCNSO so limited? First of all, one of the important things to understand with regard to the CCNSO is that most policies with regard to registrations of domain names, etc., are developed locally, so for an individual CCTLDs. And, for example, who is vertical integration, accreditation policies, etc., are developed locally. So there is no role for ICANN in that remit, in that realm. Secondly, and that has to do with the limited number of predefined global areas, so it is always important to determine whether or not a issue has a global aspect to it, or that the policies is about local issues. Secondly, the CCNSO has alternative means available as well, for instance, guidelines, advice, etc. Examples in the past of these guidelines are, for instance, the guidelines on the agreement between individual CCTLDs and ICANN, although they're not policies. Say the basic principles for those agreements have been advised by the CCNSO to ICANN and to the individual CCTLDs, and the same is true for the financial contributions of CCNSO of CCTLDs to ICANN. And the final reason why the applicability or the policy policy development is used only on a limited number of issues is CCTLDs, because there are most are in country, there are they have to deal with local laws and local public policy as well, and it's very clear that local law and public policy are paramount. So even if an ICANN policy would apply, then local law and policy are paramount. So it, from that perspective, there is a limited applicability of policies. Finally, how could you get involved in, if you're interested in CCTLD policy development and its other activities? You can attend all the CCNSO meetings. They are open, and you can attend either room, and they're always held in conjunction with the ICANN meetings. You can participate either remotely or face-to-face, and they always are held on a Tuesday and Wednesday. You can participate in the workshop and, of course, in the public common processes. And if you're more interested in the, say, local issues, you probably need to consult with your with the CCTLD in your country, and you can participate through your local processes. That's it for me. I hope, I think we need to pass it to Olaf.
Thank you very much, Bart, and hello, this is Olaf Nordling, and it's time for the very last N in the ICANN name, which means numbers. And that translates into IP addresses and autonomous system numbers. And they certainly need policies as well for when and how, to whom, and what size to be allocated. And that's the territory of the address supporting organization. So let's have a closer look at that one. Now, the address supporting organization is unique in its kind, I believe, within the ICANN structure, that it is actually based on a memorandum of understanding between ICANN as an organization and another existing organization, the Number Resource Organization, which actually takes care of the ASO function. So, in a sense, the ASO is an interface organization. We'll get back to that, how that works. But one major task of this organization is to put forward and handle the so-called global policies. And global policies are addressing policies that affect IANAs, or another function of ICANN. Their handling of the addressing resources like IP numbers and autonomous system numbers. Now, the NRO I mentioned, Number Resource Organization, well, it needs a little bit of explanation because it's a world of its own, which is based on the regional internet registries, which are recipients of address blocks from IANA, from ICANN, and in turn allocate them to the ISPs and local internet registries, national internet registries, and what they may be called, which in turn hand them over to the end user. So that's the food chain, if you like. And there are five such for their regional structure, and in alphabetical order, it's AFRINIC, which is for Africa, APNIC, which is for the Asia-Pacific region, ARIN, which is for North America, LACNIC, for Latin America and the Caribbean, and RIPE, which is for Europe and the Middle East. And they, in turn, cooperate through what's called the Number Resource Organization, which is one of the signatories of the ASO Memorandum of Understanding. And now we get to the actual policy development, because it's all happening on the regional level, and not only global policies. They develop all kinds of policies for the regional allocation of numbering resources, and very few of those really do affect IANA, and only those are called so-called global policies. So there may be other regional policies which are similar or identical across the globe, but they are not called formally global policies. They are coordinated policies. And these particular global policies, which do affect IANA, in order to take effect, they have to be developed and debated and agreed upon in all the RIRs with the same wording and same approach. Then they are channeled through this interface organization, the address supporting organization, which does a few checks of procedural matters and then forwards it, the proposal, to the ICANN board for implementation. So, you may have understood it already, but the only way to get involved in this, because it's all happening on the regional level, is to get in touch with your regional internet registries. They all have bottom-up policy development processes, regardless of whether they're global policies, coordinated policies, or purely regional policies. They all go through the same processes, which may be a little different from region to region for regional reasons. And they all have meetings, which are open, perfectly open, and also open mailing lists for those matters. So that's really the way to get involved in addressing policy development. So if you're at all interested in that, get in touch with your regional internet registry. And I think that's all for me, and I hand it back to your master of ceremonies, Marika.
Thank you very much, Olaf. So now we'll just briefly touch upon advisory committees and some other ways that you can get involved in ICANN. So in addition to the supporting organizations that develop policy recommendations directly for board approval, there are also a number of advisory committees. An advisory committee in ICANN context is a formal advisory body made up of representatives from the internet community that is tasked to advise ICANN on a particular issue or policy area. So you see, for example, the ICANN's At-Large Advisory Committee, or ALAC, is responsible for considering and providing advice on the activities of ICANN as they relate to the interests of individual internet users, also referred to as the At-Large Community. And there's also the Governmental Advisory Committee, or GAC. This advisory committee is comprised of representatives of national governments or multinational governmental organizations and then treaty organizations. And its function is to advise the ICANN board on matters that concern to governments. Then there's also the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, also known as ASAC, which is the standing committee on the security and stability of the Internet's naming and address allocation systems. And their charter includes a focus on risk analysis and auditing. And then lastly, you have the Root Server System Advisory Committee, also known as the RSAC, which provides advice on the operational requirements of root name servers. Can you please mute your phones if you're not speaking? So on each of these advisory committees have as well their own way in which you can get involved, and I would recommend that, you know, there's some links at the end of this presentation where you can find more information about the advisory committees and how you can get involved in their processes and their discussions. So there's some other ways, avenues you can explore if, you know, you're not too interested in joining a working group or some of the advisory committees. You can also apply for an ICANN Fellowship. The ICANN Fellowship program provides funding for fellows, I think mainly from developing countries, to attend the ICANN meeting and become involved in the ICANN community. For those that don't have the means to travel to ICANN meetings but do want to have the opportunity to participate. We mentioned a few times before that there's the ICANN nominating committee that appoints a number of individuals to the different supporting organizations as well as the ICANN board. Here's a link as well where you can find more information if you're interested in applying for a position. And a good way as well to see I can in action and interact with the community and learn about the different issues is to attend an ICANN meeting. The ICANN meetings rotate between the different continents in an effort as well to encourage participation in the different regions. And the next meeting is taking place in Brussels in June of this year. You'll find a link here, and there you can find more information on how to register. Participation is free of charge, the registration. Of course, you'll need to get to the meeting and pay your own way of staying here, but the actual attending the meeting itself, there's no cost involved in that. So you'll find more information there on what is on the agenda for this meeting. And then the meeting in December of this year will take place in Colombia and in South America. So, and as I mentioned before, another way to stay up to date is the ICANN policy update, in which we try to cover on a monthly basis the main developments in relation to the activities of the different supporting organizations and advisory committees. This update will contain information as well on calls for participation or calls for volunteers, the opening of public comment periods. So you have an overview there of the different activities that are taking place. And might be worth pointing out as well that the policy update is available in different languages. So here you can find a link for more information information. And a colleague of mine just pointed out that if you go to the ICANN website, there's also a recently started an e-learning webpage. On that webpage, you'll also find this presentation back in due time, as well as the recording. But there are also some other informational sessions that you can find there that go into more detail on some of the issues. I think there are some presentations on security-related matters. We also host, for every ICANN meeting, we tend to host a policy update webinar where we basically cover the different policy items that are under discussion and provide people with an update on where the different working groups stand. And it's more, you know, so people are prepared for what they can expect at the ICANN meeting. So now we've come to the end of our overview and presentation, and I would like to thank everyone very much for sticking in there and going through the motions with us. And we would like to open the floor to questions now. So, as said, you can either speak up to get your name in the queue, or you can raise your hand in the Adobe Connect. If you go to the left bottom-hand corner, you can raise your hand there. And there we already have someone. See, Mr. J.P. Blankert, please go ahead. You might be on mute. You need to star 6 to unmute. We still cannot hear you. Yes, we can hear you now. Please go ahead. I think we might have lost JP, because at least I'm not hearing anything. JP, are you there?
Yes. Do you understand me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay,
now.
Okay, I'm mute the other way. Looking at IDN abroad to set up businesses, but a lot of people are trying to register names abroad and probably never do something with it, sit on it, and then ask $100,000 of it. I find it not very ethical, let's say, point of view, for the rest of the world. You give them a chance now to have their own names and businesses, and sometimes I have the impression that in those other countries, for example, India now, they are not very aware of their own chances, for example, of having IDN in the top-level domain names, and they are just losing all the Indian top-level domain names to Westerners like us who are better informed. I find that a bit of pity, not for myself, but for them as country. Yeah. Could anything be done on more awareness in those countries to whom you want to give a chance, Jordan, Iran, India, etc., to say, people, you can already register, take your names, otherwise it will again be Americans and Dutch, etc., picking the best names before you. Put it strongly.
Olaf had a response.
I could at least start, and I presume that, that Bart could chip in as well. But I think you're aware that what's ongoing right now is mm-hmm. the fast track for IDN ccTLDs, which has already produced a number of results and introduction in the root, and which is where the country code
yes.
domains. So they are coming around, as it were, already now.
Mm.
So they get a head start, in a sense.
Yes. Well,
whether then, so you're talking about a new GTLD process, which is still to be launched, and where IDN GTLDs will be included. And, of course,
okay.
well, it may be so that... Mm-hmm. Some will be launched by, there is no limitation that you have to come from a particular group in order to launch an IDN GTLD.
Yeah.
But, of course, there are restriction and objection opportunities in the new GTLD mm-hmm. process, and you should be aware of that, that if you, for example, find that somebody is a top-level domain cyber-squatting on an IDN string that really relates to your community, you can lodge a community objection.
Mm.
That's already foreseen in the process and has been for
okay.
long. So there are some measures which are already in place. And, of course, if you happen to have a trademark in Devanagari, let's say, and someone spots on that, well, on the top-level domain, there is a similar opportunity to lodge, to file an objection for intellectual property rights on against that one. So there are quite a few measures actually
okay.
already. So,
thank you.
Bart, I don't know if you want to chip in a little on...
Just maybe one additional... requirement. If you look at country code top level domains, so the names of territories in the official language, they can only be requested, applied for with the support of the, say, with the national government and the support of the, say, what is called the local internet community. So there needs to be strong local support to have a country name for instance, India or other countries you just refer to.
Yes, but it's sometimes very different. I can tell you for Iran, it's very simple to do it, and in Libya, it's almost impossible. But okay, there are requirements. But so. It's
yeah,
very
maybe
easy
to register
in Iran.
But you have...
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you have to distinguish between registration under a country code
mm-hmm.
and applying for a country code. And the application for a country code, that goes through ICANN processes.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something like .nl, .de.
Yes.
But registering a .nl, that is done.
Yes,
locally.
Oh, yes.
Well, thank you very much for your
thank
question.
You.
And,
thank you.
And I think as well, if you look at the schedule for Brussels, there will be quite some meetings, I think, that address as well IDN-related issues. So I would encourage you as well, if you know, you have an interest
okay.
in those discussions, that
there are
as well some working groups that are available. And just to emphasize as well, something that Colin just pointed out, for all the ICANN meetings, we try to provide as much as possible opportunities for remote participation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not available to travel to the meeting due to time or cost, there are ways to ash clouds.
No,
there are
ways to
dial into the meeting, and we have Adobe Connect sessions like this one, so you can feel like you're there, and you also have chances to ask questions and participate.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Are there any other questions? As said, if there are any questions that come up after you thought through all the items we've talked about today and all the information we've shared, You should always feel free to contact the policy staff at policy-staff@icann.org, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. I don't see any other hands raised. Just to note, there are some additional resources here that provide links to different supporting and organizations and advisory committees that we spoke about, and these are the links that should form a good starting point if you want to try to find out more information and more details about these organizations and their activities. So if there are no further questions, I'd just like to thank everyone for their participation, and we hope we will see you back in a working group or a meeting or a conference call sometime in the near future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.